From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Tonight, it is Mars night. 4 full hours talking about different aspects of Mars anomalies with a number of different guests. So stand by for that. Here's what's happening. The Nevada cattle rancher, Clevin Bundy, has now called on the Clark County Sheriff Douglas Gillespie to start arresting Bureau of Land Management agents on charges of trespassing and theft as his battle against the federal government intensifies. Bundy's dispute with the feds escalated when several of his supporters were apparently pushed around by BLM officials. The BLM is currently rounding up Bundy's cattle in order to enforce a regulation in order to protect an endangered desert tortoise after 600,000 acres of public land was reclassified as federal property. He's been fighting this for 20-plus years. He has lost in court, and now they're closing in on him. The Russian government withheld intelligence from the U.S. on one of the Boston Marathon bombing suspects that may have led to further scrutiny before the attack. The Russian officials warned the FBI about the ethnic Chechen Muslim Tamrian Tsarnaev in 2011, according to the New York Times. But Russia then declined requests for more information on that U.S. resident. Twin blasts killed 3, injured more than 260 in April of 2013. Tsarnaev was later killed in a police shootout. Missouri authorities are asking for federal help in catching a serial shooter. They're trying to find out who's behind more than a dozen sniper-like attacks on drivers on Kansas City freeways over the past month. 3 drivers have been wounded by gunfire as they drove along area highways, many in an area called 3T Crossing, where 3 interstate highways intersect. 10 of the 13 shootings happened in Kansas City, including Sunday evening when a 56-year-old man was eastbound on Interstate 435 when he was shot in the left calf. A bullet went right through his car door. A day after a Murrysville, Pennsylvania teen apparently rampaged through his high school's hallways, stabbing wildly with 2 kitchen knives, the first hints of a possible motive began to emerge. The attorney for the 16-year-old raised the specter that his client may have been bullied and says that it looks like it's some kind of bullying event that may have played a role. Let's check in with our resident psychiatrist, Peter Bregan, about this. Peter, we've talked about bullies before. If this is true, once again, on this stabbing that has left 20 teens and 1 adult wounded, this kid flipped out, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, he's a real easy target, Georgie. He's very small. He's 5'3", and he's 16 years old, and he weighs only 110 pounds. So he looks like a child. As one person described, he looks like a 12-year-old, somebody else said. One of the students described him like a little shadow in the hallway. So we're right there to begin with a vulnerable person. He's described as soft-spoken and shy. And it's really important to realize that shyness is not a positive attribute. It's, you know, we praise boys now like we do girls for being quiet and shy. Not a good attribute. It always indicates that the person feels embarrassed around other people, shy, fearful around people. So we need to look at that. And there's at least, you know, one detailed description of him being repeatedly teased. One of the kids in one of his classes the year before describes it and says the students would ride him, but she doesn't know exactly what the teasing was about. I think all this reminds us that we've really got to relook at what's happening to young men, boys trying to become men in our culture now. There's a lot of pressure on them to be in a way that isn't really good for boys and wasn't good for girls. You know, we've begun to empower women more and to speak of the of shyness in women as not being positive, that they should be strong and straightforward and direct and feel comfortable dealing openly with people. But I think we're selling our boys more and more short in this regard, George. And I think it's a good time to examine these issues, to look at what's happening to boys and also the schools. You know, schools can have a zero tolerance for bullying. It just varies hugely. In some schools, bullying goes on all the time. Some of my patients describe how they've been bullied since childhood right through high school. And other schools, there's very little bullying that goes on. Now, I don't know about this school, but I think this is a clarion call at this point to think about the plight of boys and how are we going to make it possible for our youngsters to grow up feeling stronger and braver and more direct and able to relate.
And Peter, in this particular case, not that it's right or wrong, but why don't you go after the person who's bullying you as opposed to 20 other kids who probably didn't have anything to do with anything?
Well, because, you know, going after one particular kid takes a kind of personal courage. You're basically standing up to the bully. And for people who have been bullied, that's really terrifying. Like the person who's been humiliating them all along is going to humiliate them again. And I think it's a great question, George, but I think it's probably rather infrequent that people who have been bullied just confront the person who's been bullying them. I think they feel too humiliated, too suppressed, too frightened. And then when they break out, it's in some violent way, not necessarily toward many, many people, but maybe just toward one other student or toward their parents or their little brother or their sister. It's a good question, but, you know, when you get humiliated like that, you lose that courage for standing up for yourself.
Peter is the best-selling author, of course, of Medication Madness. Peter, thank you. Investigators got new information that may help them narrow the search for the Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 as new details shed light on the doomed flight's final moments early March 8th as it flew from Kuala Lumpur toward Beijing. A search plane has detected now a possible signal. That's number 5 so far from the locator beacons from the missing jet's so-called black boxes. We'll continue to follow up on that story as we have since it first occurred. In stocks, if you follow them, the NASDAQ just plummeted to its biggest one-day slide in nearly 2.5 years. Investors ran away from risky biotechnology and smaller technology stocks, and the major car makers are having problems accelerating recalls and directing dealers to stop sales of vehicles with potentially dangerous defects among an aggressive safety clampdown by auto regulators and others in the U.S., Japan, and China. Toyota, a massive recall of nearly 6.4 million vehicles worldwide, and comes on the heels of General Motors and Ford with major recalls as well. Let's check in with Michael Shedlock, the investment advisor. Mish, I remember the old days in Detroit. Very rarely did we have huge recalls like this. These were American-made cars, and they were good. What's going on now?
Well, actually, what's going on here is just an admission of past mistakes. Actually, it's a good thing. When this story first broke, GM said that they were going to take a $300 million hit on this. They later expanded it to $700 million. Now it's $1.3 billion. But at least the CEO came by and said, you know what, we made a mistake. We're sorry. We won't do it again. This isn't the way GM does business. It would be refreshing to see some kind of honesty like that in the financial business, from the banks, from the Fed. You know, we had no admission of any guilt and no prosecutions in all the financial industry. It was all swept under the rug. At least we can say GM's trying to make it right. The sorry thing here about GM, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, they did this to save $1. It would have cost them they were aware of problems with this ignition switch early on. They didn't want to spend $1 per ignition. Now it's going to cost them $1.3
billion. Oh, so much. Mish, thanks so much. Well, in the United Kingdom, they are saying that Tamiflu doesn't work. It doesn't work any better than a paracetamol drug. Hundreds of millions of pounds, they say, have been wasted on the drug for the flu. And it's probably happening here, too. Tamiflu. So check with your doctor on that story. A new outbreak of a gastrointestinal illness aboard a cruise ship may have been caused by, of course, norovirus again. At least 66 passengers, 17 crew members came down with this quickly spreading digestive bug aboard the Crown Princess. It was another one that left Los Angeles for a 7-day Pacific cruise. Apparently 3,000 passengers aboard. Scientists have challenged the idea that the Titanic was unlucky for sailing in a year where there were exceptional numbers of icebergs in the North Atlantic. The ocean liner sank on its maiden voyage 102 years ago with a loss of more than 1,500 lives. The new analysis found aboard the study says that back in 1912, the risk was not extreme. Well, however, the Titanic did hit a major iceberg, so really doesn't matter what the study says, does it? Well, on Tuesday night, Mars, Earth, and the Sun were positioned along a nearly straight line called the date of opposition because Mars and the Sun are on opposite sides of the sky. If the two orbits of Mars and the Earth were perfectly circular, that date, April 8th, would have been when the two planets were the nearest each other, but that's not going to happen now until this coming Monday. The two planets will be a mere 57 million miles apart. Also on tap, as we've been talking about, will be a blood moon where the moon will turn as red as Mars. So if you have a chance to see that, it is something else. And also a story we've been following for the week, the Curiosity rover apparently took a picture of a light shining somewhere on the side of a mountain landscape on Mars. What the heck was it? A lot of people are speculating. Mike Bira, author of Ancient Aliens on Mars, joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Tonight is Mars Night. Four separate guests all talking about different aspects of Mars. Mike Bira, one of them, author, screenwriter, lecturer, self-described born-again conspiracy theorist, maybe. Mike began his writing career after spending more than 25 years as an engineering consultant for a number of aerospace companies. And we're just going to talk with him this hour about some things on Mars. Mike is probably one of the best researchers out there. And again, some of his books, he wrote Dark Mission, The Secret History of NASA with Richard Hoagland. He also wrote The Choice, using the conscious thought and the physics of the mind to reshape the world. And his latest book, of course, is called Ancient Aliens on Mars, which is an incredible story. The one story that we are following right now is, of course, the anomaly of the light on Mars, the strange light that was picked up by the Curiosity rover on the Martian landscape. We had that picture up on the coasttocoastam.com website. Mike, have you had a chance to analyze that picture or look at it?
Yeah, I have, George. I've been looking at it for a couple days. It's pretty weird stuff.
What do you think it is?
Well, it's really difficult to tell, actually. The bottom line, you know, is that NASA's come up with three explanations for it that are all conventional, of course. One is that it's light glinting off of a rock, that it's hitting some sort of rock, and it's just really reflecting a bunch of very bright light back into the camera. The NavCam camera mass that's taking the image. The other is that it's a lens flare of some kind. In other words, light has somehow gotten into the lens, but it just, in looking at the images and looking at the way the shadows fall, it just doesn't seem to me that the sun is in the right place for it to create a lens flare. And plus, you know, I don't know the exact specs of the NavCam, but lens flares tend to be more obvious. There tends to be more than just a little bright specular reflection like this. There tends to be something kind of geometric, usually hexagonal shape, something that makes you say to yourself, well, that's a lens flare. And the last explanation is that I think is actually the least likely is that it's a cosmic ray that somehow penetrated into a vent, you know, that was in the NavCam and got in there somehow and actually impacted the CCD sensor and created a bright blanked out spot. So these are the different alternative explanations. There's actually a fourth one that was thrown up, which is that it's a dust devil on the edge of this rise, and that the basically spinning air is somehow put a bunch of particulates into the atmosphere, and that's reflecting the sunlight. But there are problems with all those explanations. I mean, it really doesn't fit any of them, because if you look at the images, I've actually got a bunch of them. If you go to Coast to Coast AM website and click on my name right there on the front page, I've got some images already up on my website. And if you look at them, what's really interesting about it is that it appears in two different images taken on two different days, or at least something like this appears on two different images on two different days, April 2nd and April 3rd. Now, the interesting thing about that is that the camera is not in the same place. It's not looking at exactly the same area in both images. So the question then becomes, okay, is this something that's like a defect in the camera? If it was, it would probably be appearing in all of the images from the right-hand side, because what this NavCam has is it has two lenses spaced apart by just a very little bit of space, just a couple of inches. And it takes a stereo image, which you can then use to determine parallax and distance and things like that. So it's a very handy instrument for navigating. But this bright flash does not appear at all in any of the left side images. So it's like it's on the right side camera images on two different days, but not on the left side images over two different days. And you kind of wonder if somebody's playing with you. And it's interesting, though, because there is an animated GIF that was created by somebody else, whose name will not be mentioned because I dislike him intensely. And it shows the two right and left-handed images taken on April 2nd. And those two images, when you see them, you see that there's actually quite a bit of movement or difference between what the left-hand and the right-hand camera lens are picking up. Now, what this could mean and why it would disappear in one and not the other is that you're looking at actually an object on the surface of Mars that's reflecting the light back specifically into the camera lens, because you have something that's called a phase angle, which is basically the sunlight has to hit something reflective and the camera has to be right in line with that very bright specular reflection. It's a very geometric straight-on kind of a thing. And that would create a very bright, sudden flash like that you could pick up in the camera. The other thing is that there's been a couple of other pictures that have been posted that have shown things that are purported to be the same thing. They're supposed to be, you know, lens flares, defects in the CCD imager, or some sort of cosmic ray causing the problem. The problem with those little bright flashes, as I look at them, and again, you can see them right on my website, is they're not the same. The ones that are on this image are very, very bright, very intense, columnar. The other images that have been shown as an example really don't compare because they're kind of faded, they're not as sharp, they're not as clear, so they don't look necessarily like artifacts. So, again, it doesn't look like the same thing is causing the two different sets of images that are being compared. And then, to get into the really weird part of it, is if you look at the first image, the April 2nd image, which is really the one that's been made a big deal of, in the background, of course, against the mountains, you see this bright flash. In the foreground, you see these objects that they're really two parallel tracks. They look like rails. And George, what they actually look like is partially buried railroad tracks. Now, I'm not saying for a minute that that's what they are, but they look like monorail or railroad tracks right there in the foreground. So it's almost as if, oh, somebody said, oh, whoops, there's railroad tracks here in the foreground. Why don't we bring attention to something in the background? My conspiratorial thoughts toward NASA lean in that direction. So what we've got here is something that's kind of a genuine mystery, and the one thing that's not being considered, which I think needs to be considered, is the possibility that this actually is a reflection off of some sort of vertical metallic, and it would have to be metallic to be this reflective, cylinder or something that's sticking up out of the ground. Yeah. And, you know, all you got to do to find out, George, is take the rover and drive over there.
Just
and
keep going. Exactly. There was a story today, Mike, that the Gustav crater once held the lake. Scientists have finally made this decision. Now, you know, we've been talking about the possibility of water on Mars for years, but it's kind of nice to know that science is catching up with all that.
Yeah, it is. You know, welcome to 15 years ago as far as the independent Mars researchers are concerned. It's, you know, the truth is there's water there. There always has been water there. We've had these images of these very dark slope streaks, that have been seen on the sides of mountainsides in pictures from Mars Global Surveyor as far back as the late 1990s.
And what about vegetation alongside of that? Let's talk about that, Mike, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you missed that strange light we've been talking about on Mars, it's linked up on our Twitter feed, so you can get to that. If you aren't following us on Twitter, that's very easy. You just register there. There's no cost to you. And then there you go. So take a look at that light. Welcome back to Coast, Mike Bear with us. Mike, so with all the water that was on Mars, and possibly still could be in some frozen former condition, what about vegetation along those shorelines or anything? Do you think that might have happened?
Oh, yeah, I think there's definitely vegetation there now. I mean, don't forget that way back in 1976 when Viking went to Mars, two missions, you had Dr. Gil Levin's experiment, the labeled release experiment, which came back positive for life, and there were three other experiments on board each of the two Vikings, and they all came back and said there was no life. But it now turns out that those instruments were not nearly sensitive enough to have picked up what they were supposed to have picked up to decide whether or not there was microbial life. And Levin's was the only instrument that was sensitive enough, and guess what? It said there's microbial life there. So if there's microbes there, there's no reason why there can't be other types of very simple, primitive plant life and vegetation. And actually, I just went and I just updated my page, which, you know, again, you can get to through the Coast to Coast AM main page. I went and updated the page of my first post, and there's a picture there that from a guest you had a couple weeks ago, Robert Morningstar, mm-hmm. and a couple of images that I put into my last book, Ancient Aliens on Mars, that show these green mossy lichens actually growing on rocks on Mars. And
that's
if
right.
you could stick around and watch these particular rocks over the course of a Martian year, which is about 2 years Earth time, you would see that these green patches, they recede and then they expand. And then what happens is that as as Mars gets warmer during the summer, moisture is put into the biosphere, and that enables these very simple plants to grow and, you know, kind of cover these rocks up like moss, and then again they recede when the winter hits. And that would also explain something called the wave of darkening, which is a phenomenon that astronomers were observing through telescopes from way back in the early 1900s, where, again, during the summer, there seemed to be this dark patch that sort of covered Mars starting at the north and south poles and meeting at the equator during the summer, and then it would recede in the winter. And it was, of course, poo-pooed by NASA that this is actually vegetation growing and coming to life. But now I think it's very likely that that's the case, you know. And you have other examples, too. You have Arthur C. Clarke's famous banyan trees on Mars that NASA's tried to explain away as, I think they said it was carbon dioxide being spit out of spider holes or holes in the
yeah.
ground. And I mean, I'm sorry, these things have 3D relief. And in my next book, I'm going to cover that really extensively and show how they look literally exactly like three-dimensional banyan trees here on Earth. So what are they? But, you know, again, it must be because there's actually water in the first 3 feet or so of the biosphere. And that when that moisture gets into it, when the ice melts a little bit, the frozen water melts, then things are able to grow.
Mike, later on in the program with some other guests, I'm going to get into Cydonia and some other regions on Mars. But just pushing that aside for a moment, why does NASA just seem to be so hesitant to talk about what Mars might have been like a long time ago? Maybe it was Earth-like, much smaller, but it did have an atmosphere, it had oceans, it had lakes. Why don't they just come out and say that?
Well, you know, George, I would argue that it definitely had an atmosphere and a very, you know, very thick atmosphere, and it had oceans and lakes and plants and vegetation
yeah.
and all kinds of life. And I mean, I've written two books, or I've written one and I'm writing another one that basically lay those arguments out. And you know, there's multiple layers for the reason why they don't want to admit it. Number one is you've got people at the lower level, you know, the bad astronomy types, the debunkers, who are just very arrogant. And NASA has told them the way things are, and that's what they believe, and that's what they're going to believe no matter what. They're just true believers. They're just you know, like the Christian foot soldiers in the Crusades. They're gonna turn anybody who opposes that viewpoint into a heretic. But then the bigger question is, like you just asked, why don't they just tell people the truth when it's so obvious to people who actually look at these pictures? And, it, you know, it goes to a very deep reason. What happened to Mars, did not necessarily happen 4 billion years ago, like NASA likes to claim. It may have been habitable, just like Earth, as recently as 1.35 million years ago. In other words, within the timeline of the existence of man on Earth, it may have actually been just like the Earth. And the problem with that is the question then becomes, okay, so there was plants and vegetation and animals and maybe even a civilization. You know, the face on Mars and Sidonia is proof of that. And an advanced civilization that seems to be more advanced than us, and it's gone, it's destroyed, and what happened to it? And when you start asking that question, that's when things go way beyond NASA's pay grade, and it becomes a political issue. So it's, I don't think it's even up to NASA to decide whether to tell people. I think that's a decision that has to be made at a much, much higher level. You know, kind of we're getting into the Steve Bassett sphere here when we start talking about that.
That old movie Mission to Mars was on with Gary Sinise.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a great movie. And, you know, toward the end, you know, the extraterrestrial that was still in the face on Mars outlined and showed them all a picture of what happened to Mars. And in that depiction, it got hit by a huge planetary object, maybe an asteroid, maybe a comet, that just annihilated the planet instantly.
Yeah.
But, you know, they did have time, based in the movie, of getting in craft spaceships because they had advanced technology, and they left. They went to different star systems. It was pretty compelling, Mike.
Well, I think it's a good argument. You know, I would question the mechanism. I think that it could have been an asteroid or a comet that hit Mars and devastated it. But if you look at the level of devastation and you look at the fact that Mars has tidal bulges, it has these two huge massive uplifts 180 degrees apart on the disk of the planet, one of which is larger than the other. That is a signature that indicates without any argument that Mars once orbited a much larger planet, what the astronomers now call a super Earth. And what that means is that Mars is not even a planet in reality, it's a moon. It's the moon of a larger planet that doesn't exist in this solar system anymore, and it either blew up or was blown up, and that's what destroyed Mars. But clearly what happened to Mars probably happened in a single day, George, and it was devastating. And again, I would argue that it's this other planet right next to Mars that exploded. And again, those are questions that NASA just really doesn't want to talk about because, you know, last time I checked, we live on a planet, right? And if they can blow up, that's kind of something people might be concerned about.
Let's take some calls here for you. Mike, Jim is in Shelton, Washington, west of the Rockies. Jim, go ahead. You're on with Mike Bira.
Well, thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My question is simply this. The light that they see on Mars there, why don't they run it through a spectrum analyzer and compare the spectrum to other known metals and kind of get an idea of what, if it's a metal, what it is?
Well, I think that the instrument itself would have to have a spectrometer on it, and that would be something that you would have to take images probably in various different bands and wavelengths to be able to determine what it matched. Now, what you could do is you could look at it and compare it, like I said, to other images of this type and say, you know, are other images that are suspected to be cosmic ray leakages, is it exactly the same kind of thing? I mean, if somebody like Jim Dellatoso could do that kind of comparison for you very, very quickly. What is a little suspicious to me, I will say, about this is that, you know, if you look at it as you zoom up as close as you can get, they do both of these glints, both these flashes, they don't really have any detail in them. It doesn't seem to be anything to them. They're just all one color, all one set of pixels, and that basically, to me, indicates that it might be more of an image artifact. But again, I still think it's up in the air, and why don't they do that? I don't know. You got to ask them that question, because I think what they ought to do, just drive over there and have a look and see if there's something that's reflecting that, because even if it's just a rock, George, it's probably the most reflective rock the planet Mars. And then the question becomes, what the heck is that made of? Is it a big, huge chunk of aluminum, titanium? You know, who knows? And, you know, again, I think the answer could be that it might be something that looks like a rock or debris. But, George, what if they get up there close and it turns out to be pretty plainly artificial? That's a risk that I don't think they're going to
take. Absolutely. Or what if it's a remnant of a spacecraft that we launched or the Russians launched a long time ago?
Yeah. Yeah, or what if it's a remnant of a spacecraft that somebody else launched longer ago?
Or what if it's still there, you know, in terms of what if it's, you know, a working spacecraft right now? Who knows?
Yeah, I'm not sure how far away that horizon is, but it doesn't look like it's something that the rover couldn't get to. So, you know, I don't know why we don't just go take a look and solve the mystery once and for all.
They are seeing a lot of strange anomalies on the planet, Mike, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, there's all kinds of stuff. And, you know, it's funny because I was looking at one of the debunking websites today, and he was arguing that, well, you know, Mars is a really weird place. And, of course, it's weird. It's another planet. It's going to be very, very weird. And it struck me that, you know, how come you can't go to the next step and just include the possibility that there's aliens that built some of this stuff? I mean, if it's so weird that you can't equate it to anything on Earth, then isn't it weird enough that you ought to be able to be open to the idea that it could actually be manufactured and it could be the remnants of an alien civilization or a related human civilization? You know, who knows what the real history of the human race is? So that's an interesting question that gets asked, but it doesn't ever really get answered by them.
First time caller, Chad in Albany, New York. Hi, Chad. Go ahead.
Yes, I was wondering, you were mentioning how the timeline was different, you know, for years with Mars and Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we were to fly out to Mars and then be able to make a return trip, how would that affect age of a person making that trip compared to the age of the people still on Earth?
Well, in real time, Chad, it would only be, you know, a year up, a year back, a year and a half up and back. What, 2 to 3 years, Michael?
Yeah, basically it would be the duration of the flight and the time that you spent there and the time back, because you're not going to be traveling anywhere near close enough to the speed of light for time dilation to take place. And also, nobody knows for sure whether that whole theory even is real, whether time really does slow down when you're on board a ship, you know, it's traveling close to the speed of light. So, you know, that would be the reason. And I actually suspect that we've been to Mars and back with some of the secret technology we've had very much more rapidly than a year or two. So basically time wouldn't pass any different to speak of. There'd be some small changes because you're outside of the Earth's gravitational field, which does affect time. So when you're weightless, time would be a little bit different. The clocks would run a little bit differently. But basically it would be a year or two out, you know, depending on when you launched. It would be the time you spend in orbit and then the time it took to get back. So let's say 5 years round trip. And I know my friend Ken Johnston would like to make it a one-way trip, but basically 5 years.
Yeah, he
out,
wants
you know,
to go, doesn't he?
He does. He does. And I'm all, you know, I'm behind him 100%. But basically, if it took 5 years to do the mission, you would experience 5 years of difference. And when he got back, you know, your wife and your friends and everybody would still be just 5 years older.
I told Ken when he was on the program, I said, Ken, you're going to be in your 70s and 80s by the time we launch to go there.
Yeah.
But he thinks they're going to pick him.
Well, the thing is, George, you know, everybody, none of us are going to get out of this alive, right? We're all going to die. And Ken's dream is to go to Mars or go to the moon or, you know, be an astronaut. And I think the way he looks at it, I just was with him a couple weeks ago. The way he looks at it is, you know, it's going to happen whether I'm here or whether I'm on Mars. So I may as well go have that peak experience before I go. And I hope he makes it too.
Let's go to West Palm Beach, Florida now. Mike's on the wild card line. Mike, you're on with Mike Barra.
Yeah, the light you see in the picture is probably a reflection from a headlight of a car or a gas in Arizona. All the pictures from NASA are phony. They're all made in the desert there. I don't know if you notice, sometimes they get sloppy. Sloppy when they make these things, that light shouldn't be there, but they're producing hundreds of pictures a day. They make mistakes. One picture I saw, a tennis sneaker, I don't know if you remember that story, was buried in the sand. Another one was a beer can. They can't help it. The real Mars has canals on it. We don't see the canals anymore. But for 60 years before 1965, there were hundreds of pictures made of the canals. They were published in the New York Times and journals. And in 1962, the U.S. Air Force actually made a map based on those pictures of the canals. You can see it on Google. You Google it. The canals of Mars, 1962. The Air Force took it very seriously about the canals, but we don't see them anymore. Also, you're right about the darkening areas. What you left out, though, was before 1965, that they have color pictures in green. In 1955, There's a picture of Mars taken from a telescope in South Africa. It is the half the planet is green, and they say in the picture this is vegetation. Also, there's a blue atmosphere. Also, there are icy blue clouds floating above the planet. Now, that picture is a smoking gun. That could blow the whole thing wide open of this fraud of these pictures you're talking about. Everything they've shown you is a lie. It's all made up. It does not correspond to what they saw before 1965. Do you have an
What's
answer
your reaction?
For it?
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I mean, first of all, I want to see the beer can, and I want to know what they're drinking up there. You know, I'm really interested in that. I'm not going to disagree with you. I am looking up your Canals of Mars image from 1962, and it does seem to exist, and I'll look into it in greater detail. But, you know, the truth is that a lot of these canals, a lot of this stuff, were probably areas, dark areas of vegetation that were growing, and they were all done with telescopic observations. Now, that's unless, of course, we actually had secret space programs, secret technology. A lot of people think we had flying saucer technology back in the late 1950s. I know some of the astronauts believed it because they were really frustrated by the tin cans they were going up in. But, you know, I don't know how to comment on the rest of that stuff. I can believe there's a lot of things about Mars they haven't told us the truth of. And if there is, you know, more water in the biosphere than we've been told, the series of lies that NASA's told over the years about Mars and about other places doesn't – I really can't preclude anything. This guy might be right. I'm actually – on my wall, looking at an image that somebody slid under my door at a conference once, that is a picture of what looks like a statue of a human with a cat's head playing air guitar or something, standing in a ridge on Mars. And you know, he told me he got it from a certain site. I went to the site. Of course, like a lot of people, he didn't think to write down the coordinates. And so I've looked for it, but there's no question in looking at the image, it does come from this particular database. But, you know, I don't know what it is. I don't know what the heck it is. It's certainly something really weird. So there's all kinds of things on Mars that they haven't told us and that they don't want to tell us, and there's a lot of reasons for that. And I think we just got to get past this idea that they have to tell us or that we want to tell us. I mean, you know, the argument's been made that government, you know, we need our government to acknowledge this. Well, you know, George, I don't know about you, but do you need the government to acknowledge something before you believe it's true? I mean, to me, when government acknowledges something, I'm less inclined to believe it's true.
To believe it, absolutely. Mike, we're almost out of time. Give us your website and where we can get your works.
Okay, it's mikebarra.blogspot.com. You can connect with me on Facebook or Twitter. I've got several different TV shows going on, one of which is showing after this program. You can DVR it and listen to Coast and then watch my show over on Destination America. And you can pick up all the books, Ancient Aliens on Mars, Ancient Aliens on the Moon, The Choice, Dark Mission, on Amazon.com. And look out for Ancient Aliens on Mars 2 next year. And I think this light on Mars is probably going to, you know, be a certain portion of that book. It's going to be a segment in it for sure.
Good for you. It's exciting. Thank you very much. Mike Barra, up next. We're going to talk with a plasma physicist about his thoughts on Mars.